We're now beginning the Zappa Show.
Jumbo, go away.
Signs up the door. blow cause the sky's gone. The wind can't blow cause the sky's gone. The wind can't blow cause the sky's gone.
the drums in the corner over by the bar. It was a beautiful ball with a messed up door and a cheesy little lamp, with a sign on the front said Fender Champ and a second hand guitar. It was a jazzy band with a Randy bar.
Back to you, Bill.
Look at Jeremy Joe's cabal. His mom was screaming, Hershey Falls, he was playing the same old song. The afternoon, sometimes we would play it all night long. It was all we knew and easy to, so we wouldn't get it wrong. Even if he's playing on a saxophone.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
He's always pretty good. Talk about keeping the band together, and we figured that we should.
The diamond is the hardest substance known to man, but you can't prove it.
So if it's not a stupid name, and the cars printed up for a couple of months, if it was all the way to fame.
Isn't that amazing?
Got fancy suits and be the blue, and a sign on the back of the car, and we was ready to work in a go-go bar.
One, two, three, four, chop that broccoli some more.
Chance in life to play a song that goes like.
Thank you. of you still. Please let me love you. Please say you will. Yeah.
She said, Johnny, darling, don't ever go yet. And she said, Johnny, darling, don't ever go yet.
Was our little Zappa extravaganza.
Awesome set, Bob.
Yeah, wasn't that great? And here's what you heard, Bert. We began with Jumbo Go Away.
Jumbo
then we
Go
listened
Away.
To Jones Crusher. Jones Crusher, then Jonestown. Then Joe's Garage. Then maybe Janet's Big Dance Number. And it ain't necessarily the St. James Infirmary. It must be a camel. Jesse Lee, and ended with Johnny Darling, which was only 56 minutes. Now, there's Kate. Katie Thomas saying good morning. Maybe she might have something interesting to say. Let's see if she's phoned in. Web control, there it is. Yeah, if you want to participate in the Zappa dialogue, Katie, I don't know how much you know about Zappa. Who's that on the anonymous? I just demuted. Katie, when is that? Is it 2:34? What time is that? 2:23. Just a couple minutes ago. So type in, Katie, if you can't make it. Okay, so we had a good stretch of variety there. Frank's range of creativity. Katie says you're going to call in. Okay, good. And then we're going to hear Bert, the, what can you say, the president of student council. The ass licker of the year. Hello, Katie.
No.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, do you know much about Zappa, Katie?
No. Nothing.
Well, let's see what you can pick up from this, because you can improvise ideas as they occur to you.
Sure.
Well, Bert, you had me and Roxy being the experts, and Bert was the newbie, and he. He ass licked his, what is it, ass kissed his way all the way to the top of the class, doing his homework, reading up on the background and making discoveries, and actually was quite amazed eventually at the phenomenon of Frank Zappa. So we chose Bert. What is it they do in school? You know, like they pick the best student to give the essay of the year. And Bert get nominated for doing that because he said he went back and read my manifesto from 1995 called Up the Orphic Ante, and part two is called Silencing the Virtually Solar Theater, and Zappa's a big part of that, the themes in those two essays that predicted ion and everything, and Bert noticed that, so I'd be interested in what patterns he notices in it, and then what it evokes for me, what new ideas might occur to me just because someone's commenting on them. You know?
Yeah. Good job, Bert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bert was Yeah, I don't know. Do I have one more funny remark to make? Let's see. Yeah, Bert did his homework, and he has been rewarded well. And now he can have the final word, almost, the last word from Bert, the recently freed man under the new Reconstruction Act.
Yeah, I read, well, first what sparked this is that we were talking about McLuhan, and it was the, we were talking about the virtual March of McLuhan with Mr. Thiel. And then Bob commented and gave him 104 edits. So I asked Bob about it, and Bob shot me the essay of McLuhan, the Holopathic Quadrophenia of the Mouse That Roared Syndrome. And I started reading it, and which is always interesting when I look at Bob's work. It's many detours in the work. And I think it was right after the phase two of the McLuhan essay. It said, see up the orthic ante and silencing the virtual solar theater. So I took the detour. I read up the orthic ante maybe 2 years ago. And at that time, it didn't, it was a lot of information to absorb. But,
You were still a, slave, Bert. You know, you had not.
Yeah, a literate slave. Yes. A literate slave.
Yeah.
So I read the up the orthic ante, and there was some highlights in there, and it was right at the end, actually. Well, actually, all through it was a lot of revelations of things that after the last 2 years came to light. But at the end, right at the end, Bob starts talked about the physics. Yeah, that was one thing that sparked to me, the physics, and about, it's just one page. Since 1900, our bodies under electric conditions can only be considered as subatomic particles. Modern physics, especially quantum modeling, has always only been describing our social actualities. The same applies to modern chemistry, particularly genetics. And that blew my mind, because when you look at what we're involved with ion, and the complete formulas, we're changing the basic core of what we are. So that was just the beginning of a wow for me. And then at the end, Bob talks about the D cell, and that he and Carolyn are the new Adam and Eve. So the up the
Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve.
Adam in the Bible.
Right, but Bert's talking about that we're changing on an atomic level. Wouldn't that be a good play on words? Atom and Eve?
Oh, yeah, good one.
Yeah. And then also at the end, he talks about Pons and Fleischmann with the, which we know used to be cold fusion, but now Bob and Carolyn and JW brought through cold play. So that was quite an interesting read. But what really blew my mind, and I've emailed Bob about, is that then I read Silencing the Virtual Solar Theater, and then it was amazing how much more was spoken about DNA vortexes and how Zappa is interwoven into the what Zappa means to lockdown Bob Rule. It's
right.
So many quotes. I mean, it's funny, you were talking earlier, Bob, you were talking about Nelson Thal and Ivan Stang, and that was one thing that I read. It talks about that Ivan Stang and Nelson Thal were John the Baptist. You considered them John the Baptist for you, yeah. But then you also followed up that Zappa was the third John the Baptist, due to his release of the man from Utopia.
Yes.
And the one question I had is that he confirmed in his autobiography your religion. So there's a question there.
Yes.
What was your religion? He described on page 234 of his autobiography.
That's right. He says if he did have a religion, it would be the Bob Dobbs, J.R. Bob Dobbs Church Sub Genius religion.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
That's what you're referring to. You read it?
No, I didn't read the autobiography. I'm just talking about the one reference in the Silence in the Virtue Soul of Theater.
That, right, you didn't know the details of it.
No, I didn't know the details. So you filled that in just real quickly. That was.
Yeah.
So, but Frank really plays a big part in your chart in the Lockdown Bob Rule. Your charts at the top says the Grand Wazoo's Decade Dance. And it's all interwoven in this essay. It's amazing. It is amazing. And especially talking about the DNA and how Frank anticipated the new matter through you and Carolyn.
Yeah.
And here's one. Frank Zappa, because he truly anticipated the Promethean creation of the new matter with his ecstatic Manipian musical inventions, and because he mimed the lonely flight of Rai to the max, to the point of putting cancer right up the yin-yang. What a blinding mirror. What an ear-spilling echo. Frank understood how advertising advertises advertising, and he used this principle to point the new substance of Bob and Connie. It's like a prophecy, Bob, for me. I mean, this is 20 years ago. 20 years ago, to read this, and, you know, almost you want to call everybody up and say, do you know what's really this? I mean, a lot of what I see, it makes sense to me of all that you know that you would have to forget, because if you remembered everything, no one would be able to talk to you.
Right. Yeah, I must forget every day.
You have to forget every day. You'd have to be... I mean, like a lot of people, when like if someone first dials in and they hear about HML Hobab and it's 6,000 or, you know, so many thousand years old, they think it's crazy. But when you start to put these pieces of the puzzle together with Ion appearing and how Ion has said that they're changing the whole history, and that's something that you've always said, it you have to really open up that. There is no time, because when I read this last week, it blew me away, because I'm like, this is what's going on right now.
Yeah.
This is what's going on right now. And then you also spoke about the infinity. You talk about the new breed is two zeros touching, which can suggest the number eight lying on its side, invoking infinity or eternity, or the possible as implied by Zappa's new symbolic logo on his business card. So Zappa had a infinity logo on his business card, huh? Wow.
Yeah, a Mobius strip. Infinity circle, yeah. And his company was called Why Not? Question mark. Why not? And basically, the original intention was to encourage Russian business. The breakup of Russia in 1989, 1990, 1991, and he said, if we don't help them in some way, they'll revert back to communism or Stalinism or something. Mm. And so he, because he knew some of the top musicians in Russian culture, they'd been fans of his, he felt sympathetic. He found the Russian people really interesting people. He liked them. So he set up a way of trying to help them keep their businesses world going or starting. Teach them about capitalism stuff. That's what Why Not was about.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was named cultural ambassador for Czechoslovakia from the United States. So he was Czechoslovakia announces that he is some kind of cultural liaison with the United States. And Secretary of State James Baker, his wife had been on the PMRC, the press rock band, the bad lyrics stuff in 1985 that led to Frank, testifying in Congress, because he had mocked James Baker's wife. He was out to get him, and as soon as he heard that, what was the name of that guy, the head of Czechoslovakia? Forget his name now; he's gone. But he had been a fan of Frank when he was a playwright and artist in the 70s. So he remembered Frank. Vaclav Havel, that was his name, Vaclav Havel. So he appointed Frank, and as soon as James Baker heard this, he was flying to Russia or someplace, he turned the plane around and went right to Prague, Czechoslovakia, marched up to the palace where Havel was, and said, if you have Zappa as cultural ambassador, then you can stop doing business with the United States. So he was going to cut him off at the key point, key vortex. So when Zappa heard that, he said, oh, geez, I'm not going to screw up your country. You don't have to give it to me. I'll back off. You know, it's more important that you start getting the scarce money that's around through linking up with American business. So Frank resigned from the assignment. But that was the beginning of his sort of being recognized as helping the post-Berlin Wall ex-Soviet Union.
Yeah,
and he was thinking running for president in the middle of that.
Yeah, you mentioned in the essay, this one note that I had, that Frank, you said that Frank stopped touring in 1988 and emphasized his suggestions to dismantle the Berlin Wall for the next few years in order to illustrate the social engineering, tetrad manner aspects of his solo theater. So Frank was also talking about, but did you feed him that information? Did you suggest that to him?
Yes, I told him about it. Yeah. But he was on, he might have done a concert or two in spring of 88, on Near the Wall or something. It's something about that. Because he comes on Johnny Carson or one of those shows in the summer of 88. And the band, I think the tour had just stopped. It imploded. The band members started fighting among themselves, so he had to cancel the tour. And he goes on Johnny Carson or something. He talks about this concert around the Berlin Wall, and he says it should be taken down. It's irrelevant. And no one was thinking about the Berlin Wall at that point in 88.
Yeah.
And he made a big issue out of it. And that was unique. And then it was gone a year later. So just like LaRouche made a broadcast on Halloween 1988 about Germany being reunited. So it was the Evergreens, me, LaRouche, and Zappa who kind of focused on the Berlin Wall and said that it was going to go away.
There was also a quote that I also found interesting. You state that as Zappa invokes my body from the landscape like a fractal in search of a strange attractor, he translates into a virtual, xenochronous, conceptual sound environment that desperately longs for feelings and sensations of quadrophenia, the contents of which have already been described above and are anthropomorphized by 10 holopathic code signals. Russell, Kristen Mirrod, yes. I mean, this is it's like a science document, Bob. This is a science document
that
I mean, you have sociology, anthropology, you have physics, chemistry, all mixed into this. This is it's amazing, but it shows that Frank, that's the thing that, like, you know, when I read this, I told you that it made me reflect on all of our previous, from listening to you and Roxanna talk about him. He was really, I think we talked about it before, he's a polymath. I mean, he was so rich.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't just a musician. He was really very astute in where he was and what was going on and what he was doing and what he was trying to project. Which you would say he was a really thorough guy. I mean, he did have his biases, which that's something that I noticed in reading the Up the Orphic Ante, that all of your holy offices, they have biases, and you're the only one that doesn't. And now you're standing on top of all their heads with Ion, and that's where we are here today. So that's what's fun to read this. It's amazing. It's really amazing to see this. I mean, just Frank. Also, I've been reading LaRouche, which is quite interesting. You call him now the holopathic radio. We no longer refer to LaRouche. But it's really interesting to read all of these holy offices, but Frank is very special for me because, as you know, I used to be a musician a long time ago, and how he really just used it as a tool. He was really a very sharp soldier or general, as you could say, fighting.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, I'm going to read the Frank part. It's the, so I have here, however, I'm talking about the baby boomers are the 22 vortex, the Generation X is the 14 vortex, and then the new batch, or the millennials, I didn't have that term then, but the kids born around the time of the Berlin Wall going down, the end of the Cold War. So I call them the new batch, and I was quoting Captain Beefheart. He did a song about the new batch, best batch yet. So I say, however, the new batch play with both vortexes, 22 and 14, with a feeling of optimistic hyper-boredom, because these spirals are in their genes. They can enjoy any of my fellow satellite composers, that's the holy orifices, as Zion calls them, because they know, they just feel that Bob and Connie won. So they feel optimistic. Now this brings us to why Frank Zappa was the only survivor after the deluge of 1987, the flood of 1987. And so I say, remember when I declared to Mike Dyer, who was my co-host in CKLN, and the Vicinals, that means the environment, audience of CKLN, and we're inside each other's guts electrically, proprioceptively, so you call them Vicinals. Remember when I declared to Mike Dyer and the Vicinals of CKLN around Toronto in March of 1988 after winning over the Secret Council of Ten? Quote, even Bob and Connie need an audio enema. As George Ian Arlett, my bodyguard, Connie and I headed off to Buffalo for another Zappa concert during his awesome tour of The Best Band You Never Heard. So The Best Band You Never Heard, all that's a question. Remember that? For satellite conductors, music is the best. And it was Frank Zappa who constantly exuded quadrophenia / ecstasy in every moment of his lifelong composition / chemical explosion. And there is no doubt that his alchemy pointed the way to creating the new life, life in quotes, that Bob and Connie promised, and is the reason Connie wears a different Zappa t-shirt in her laboratory every day. She had many Zappa t-shirts, and that was true.
Wow.
In New York. She'd wear a different Zappa t-shirt. By the way, I say, it is interesting to observe that both competing John the Baptist for the Dobbs couple, Reverend Ivor Stang and Nelson Thal, and remember, Stang would have sued Thal for Bosmi Ecology albums if Thal was in the States. So you have a real polarity there. But Thal was a Canadian, so Stang couldn't get at him. That both competing John the Baptist for the Dobbs couple began to surface in the same year, 1983. Stang gets on the radio, starts talking about the Church Sub Genius, and Nelson gets involved with me. Okay, and that other, let's see. All right, so those two, John the Baptist, Reverend Stang, Nelson Thal, and then I go, and that other fulfillment of the mandate from Finnegan's Wake, Frank Zappa revealed his role as a third John the Baptist for us when he released his album The Man from Utopia in 1983, same year, and later confirmed this when he stated his preference for one of the interpretations of My Religion on page 234 of his autobiography, The Real Frank Zappa Book, 1989. Now, that The Man from Utopia is about the concert in Sicily in Zappa's 1982 tour when he was in Italy, and he plays at a concert and there is a riot that breaks out. So
wow, yeah, you talked
the cover,
about that.
Right, and so I'm mentioning this in 1995, the album The Man from Utopia, or The Man from Slack Zone, and that's what I am. But on the album cover, it's Zappa playing a painting of Zappa, but he's swatting flies and mosquitoes, and there's tear gas being thrown, and there's a big riot all around him. It's almost like a biblical scene in the Book of Revelation. So So then, October 2014, I go to the Marin County Film Festival to see the documentary made about that trip and that concert. Because the and this was Zappa also visiting where his parents were from, small place, small town, can't remember the name, you know, very humble beginnings. So he's going back to see his roots in 1982, and he plays in Palermo, probably, and the people didn't really know how to put rock concerts on, so they had Zappa's stage was in the middle of this big football stadium, and the audience was like a mile away. They were over the football stand. There was a huge gap between Zappa and the audience. And then when the concert started and the audience couldn't hear it, they started rioting and throwing tear gas. And then I think the cops came out and fought them. So this total chaos happened. And this is in the summer of 72 when there's a war between the mafia and the police and generals, with many of the top justices and generals being killed by the mafia, and there was some other aspect politically going on there. So it was a very dangerous time in Italy. So Frank is there. So in 1984, the footage of that, some Italian guy who got his father to drive him to the concert, he didn't get to the concert. They got held up by whatever, traffic or something. But he heard about it and eventually made this documentary going back, and he got footage from the Zappa family. And he has Gail and her children, Dweezil and Moon. I don't know if Ahmet was there. And they go visit, they go back in 2012 or something and visit where Zappa's parents came from. And they go to the house and they find it. And then they meet actual Zappa's relatives that they did not know but were still there. So this whole reunion around this summer concert in from 1982 and comes out called The Man from Utopia, I attend the premiere of that documentary and interact with Gail Zappa on October 6th and 7th, and then she dies exactly a year later, October 7th, 2015. So this album turned out to be my last, you know, content in the Zappa world. This theme, The Man from Utopia. Are you still with us, Katie?
Oh, I am, yeah,
You're following this.
Yep.
So, that's kind of synchronistic. Now, on the tiny note chart, Zappa talked about the big note, so I call this the little note, and it's Zanocrinus, Bob's tiny note. So Zanocrity comes from Frank, tiny note comes from Frank, the grand wazoo of the decade dance or decadence comes from Frank. The hidden ground is really Zappa, because he's the one who's got the latest technology. He's a musician.
Yeah.
He can communicate and reach a lot more people than McLuhan can or LaRouche or anybody, you know, because he is on the leading edge of the important drug of the masses, music. And he's also does other media, too, and his goal was to have a TV show, you know, Johnny Carson nightly talk show, where they would do a satire of news stories. And so it was a pretty lofty ambition, but it didn't happen. So Zappa was the ground. I made a subplay in 1984, and it was about the interaction of all the holy offices, and I made Zappa be the punchline. He was like one out. He won out over the others. And I replay that here where I say he's the only one who survived the deluge in 1987. So what happened in 1987? All right, here's the deluge. So by 1990, I write, there was nothing to be done but to study the effects of electrified waiting on waiting, the effects of waiting on waiting, to see if Bob and Connie made it to 1992 in some kind of physical state. This meant that the other nine evaporated satellite composers would only exist as much as I focused my attention and interest on them. This is all that would resuscitate them until their final decomposition in 1987. 1987, that year, saw, one, the fruitless and futile revival of Marsh McLuhan with the publication of his letters, the beginning of the railroading of Lyndon LaRouche into jail, the turmoil in the Worldwide Church of God, that's Herbert W. Armstrong, in the year after the death of Herbert W. Armstrong in 1986, the death of Dr. Peter Beter, the surfacing of cancer in Mae Brussel, the surfacing of health problems in Frank Zappa, the surfacing of revelations and scandals about Krishnamurti in the year after his death in 1986, and the inability of Garrett Dean to find me after 1986. So all the holy offices were under great stress in 87. So Zappa was a survivor of that. So then do I say anything else? Let's see. What am I looking at? This is Silence Verse. Okay, so Zappa. So then I say, I'm talking about Frank anticipating the new life. So I go, what is this new life? Life in quotes. The new batch, post-1990, of Manipians express themselves a la Forrest Gump, which was a movie about 1994, and Beavis and Butthead, by pretending to be dumb and dumber about the passé contents of both the 22 Vortex, that's the Baby Boomers, which is East Coast and Atlantean, and involves LaRouche, McLuhan, Krishnamurti, and Beter, and the 14 Vortex, West Coast and Lemurian, which is Mae Brussel, Frank Zappa, Garrett Dean, and Herbert W. Armstrong. The old DNA was made up of the intertwined spirals of 22 and 14, and from 1953 to 1993, we witnessed its unraveling and melting. I'm talking about the old DNA. The new D-squared DNA exists with the resultant alchemy produced by the mere addition. So the new D-squared NA, DNA, but a 2 in there to indicate squared, the D-squared NNA, or DNA squared, I don't know if that's written right. Someone else may have typed that wrong. The new DNA squared exists with the resultant alchemy produced by the mere addition of decelled water, the new philosopher's stone. This began to be manufactured and distributed in 1994 after the deaths of Jodun Sloan, Sun Ra, Walter Fishman, Garrett Dean, and Frank Zappa in 1993, and Charles Bukowski in 1994. The number characterizing the new breed is 20s touching, which can suggest the number 8 laying on a side, evoking infinity or eternity, or the possible, not the impossible, or the possible, as implied by Zappa's new symbolic logo on his business card and also on the album cover of Broadway the Hard Way, 1988. Let's see. 8 is the interval between 22 and 14, and 1/2 of 8 is 4. So 18 is retrieved by adding and subtracting 4 to 14 and from 22, respectively. 18 is an appropriate symbol of transition to the new for Bob and Connie's kids because they are in the interval of Manipian indifference to the old DNA spirals of 22 and 14. Hence their obsession, these new batch, their obsession with the Orphic gods of Eros, that's the world government, Chaos, the solar government, Gaia, the universal government, and Orpheus, the mythic government, and remember, Orpheus tuned the whole world. The physical forces / principles of the cult of Isis and her number 18. And until, so these kids are obsessed with this stuff, until they contact Mir Connie and are shown via the pentad the way of the decade dancer, or decad dancer squared. 10 by 10 equals 100. And the final Orphic conductor, so conductor, but it becomes con man also, C-O-N hyphen doctor. And the final Orphic conductor to play the music to accompany the ritual dance of the child killer, that's major song on the fourth side of the first album, Freakout, ritual dance of the child killer. And I have that in brackets, decade dancer seed. Is, of course, Frank Zappa. And Frank Zappa, too, because he truly anticipated the Promethean, like Prometheus, who's a LaRouche hero, he anticipated the Promethean creation of the new matter with his ecstatic Manipian musical inventions in quotes, and because he mined the lonely flight of Rai to the max, like he was the last Rai returning to the plane of essence, the last separate genius. To the point, he mocked the lonely flight to the point of putting cancer right up his own yin-yang. What a blinding mirror. What an ear-splitting echo. Frank understood how advertising advertises advertising, and he used this principle to point to the new substance of Bob and Connie. See, this is talking like I sell. The new substance, substance capitalized.
Yeah.
Okay, listen to this. You read it a little too fast, so you missed some of the actual important words. Using the quark tune, which is a quark, subatomic particle, mixed with media dynamics that come alive, or the Endor meme, and that's the cartoon, so I made this word up, the quark tune. And in quotes, mu-masons get me hot. Mu-masons were a category of subatomic particles that Zappa talked about in the 60s. Using the quark tune as a guiding motif, Zappa sang the body swallowing. He sang the body swallowing. He sculpted Bob Dobbs' formula, that's the bigger chart, how the media archetypes fit the Battle of Jericho, with such precision that even his own most astute fans are still stunned into a blurred perception of Zappa's project/object. For example, see the book The Negative Dialectics of Poodle Play, composed by a collective under the name of Ben Watson. That was a joke. Ben Watson was the singular author, but he was quite a controversial character, so I called him, and he did use a lot of Zappa friends' knowledge, so I called them a collective. So, for example, see the book The Negative Dialectics of Poodle Play, that came out in 94, composed by a collective under the name of Ben Watson. However, this book is essentially very useful if negative dialectics, in quotes, negative dialectics. Now, this interview you sent me, Bert, for tonight, from Telos, by that Balpaccio guy, that Italian. Telos is the journal for negative dialectics. So it's appropriate to bring that up. So I'm saying back then, 20-plus years ago, however, this book by Ben Watson, which is inspired a lot by Theodore Adorno, however, this book is essentially very useful if negative dialectics is understood as a Manippean interpretation of Zappa's Manippean action, disguised as a pragmatic socialist exegesis. The theorem, Data in Action, DAD, the art movement, the theorem data in action unfortunately refers only to historical activities that are too tiny to encompass the actions of the corporate dataists. That's Madison Avenue and the Pentagon. They're